Are we ready? Hi everyone, my name is Kenny Madison. I'm a senior artist at DICE, right now working on Battlefield 3. Before, I've worked with the Frostbite team for about a year as a technical lighting artist. Working on this lighting model, I worked at DICE for almost 15 years and been involved with most of the game created at DICE. Lighting both in film and in computer games has always been a passion of mine. And lighting in computer games especially, because we let the player take control of the camera and basically look at whatever he or she wants. I'm going to talk to you today about the new lighting system in Frostbite 2 and how it enables us to stretch the boundaries of lighting in Battlefield 3 with its highly dynamic and varied and destructible environments. And the agenda looks like this. I'll go through our past, basically, in the studio, and it's Battlefield and Mirror's Edge. What we wanted for Battlefield 3. We wanted to merge these two games, basically, and we also wanted some improvements, of course. The big thing was that we needed a real-time radiosity lighting system and also a new editor. I'll go through how real-time radiosity architecture works for both small environments and large environments, and how lights works in our engine, and best practice, basically. I'll have a conclusion, and I'll have a summary, and of course, at the end, I'll have a Q&A. So, our past. Our past is bad company, Battlefield bad company, using Frostbite 1 engine, and Mirror's Edge using Unreal Engine 3. Now, both of these engines are very different. Frostbite 1 was made to have outdoor landscapes and a fully destructible world, basically. And it had 100% dynamic shadows and a three-point lighting system. We had no global illumination at all. We baked static occlusion maps for bigger objects. Now for Mirror's Edge, we didn't need any destruction the same scale as Battlefield. And the main focus was city landscapes. And so we baked static light maps for this, and that worked fine. We used Unreal Engine 3 with Illuminate Labs Beast offline light mapping bake for this project. So how could we get the best from these both two worlds, basically, and some more? We want a global illumination in a highly destructible and dynamic environment. Now, this is the big one, right? How can we get it looking like Mirror's Edge and have a fully destructible world? We also wanted a really nice indoor lighting. And as you can see on the right side, that's the Mirror's Edge we did, and it had a beautiful indoor. Bad Company 2 or Battlefield Bad Company 1 and 2 didn't really have that nice indoor lighting, as you can see there. We also wanted really big maps, and that's our heritage from Battlefield 2, basically. But we also wanted to be able to make big cities, not just big landscapes. We were also very interested in reflective surfaces, especially in a really huge world. Now, we worked really hard on that for Mirror's Edge, to have a lot of reflective surfaces. And reflective surfaces is very important to give life to all materials. Mirror's Edge, as I said, did this really good, but we always have problems with that in Frostbite 1. One big problem is when you're moving from an outdoor environment into an indoor environment, and you have some reflective surfaces walking around, basically. We were also interested in a lot of lights, and with lights come one big problems with destruction. We want to be able to destroy them. In these both screenshots you can see here, we have static baked light map. And then we cannot destroy them because it's baked in into the texture. So to be able to have a very dynamic and destructible world, we need some more improvements. So the first thing is deferred rendering. And what this gives us is that we can actually destroy all point lights or all lights in the world. Another thing is we wanted more lighting models. And that also is like translucency, metal shaders, more ways of making the world look better with like vegetation and that kind of stuff. One thing that was very important for us was fast workflow. I don't know if everybody recognized this, but this is incredible. And this is when we're working on Mirror's Edge. And one of these small cubes you can see there is one tile that's being rendered for the static light maps. And this is very time consuming. One level in Mirror's Edge could take up to a day to render the light maps. Here's a picture from the old office we have, and everybody's standing in line to work on the game. And what I mean by simultaneously that we want to be able to work with lighting artists and level artists and sound and design at the same time. Usually we have these gates that like the same design leaves the level to the lighting artists, or we have to go back. If we want to change something, we need to go back and forth. We want to be able to work simultaneously on the level. Particle lighting. Now we have always had problems with particle lighting because they didn't really fit into the world. Sometimes they look too bright or they're too dark or they're just wrong color. And also when we move to new light setting and use the same effects, they don't really fit into that light setting, but they're made to fit into this level. We want new bloom. And last, we want filmic tone mapping. Now the biggest thing we wanted was this real-time radiosity lighting system. We wanted to be able to look like Mirror's Edge, but have it dynamically, so we can destroy things and still have that in the game. So we found this in a company called Gimerics that's created a software they called Enlighten. It's a UK-based company that comes from Cambridge, and it was spun out of the Cambridge University. We've been working a couple of years with these guys to implement this into Frostbite, and changing it and working with it so we can get the most out of it. It works for all platforms. We have it for PlayStation, 360, and for PC. And we wanted a new editor, basically. So I'll show you a film now. I'll talk on it while you're looking at it. So let's go. One thing that was really interesting that we wanted was that we wanted to be able to go through being a big crammed area. So now the character found a striker, a tank, and they're getting out of it. So we want to be able to light that
Let's
small
go.
Part of it.
Hit the road.
But then they're going out to this huge world, and all the lighting is correctly made. And so on.
I guess we're late to the party. Where's the LT? Hang it right up here.
973.
In getting a lot of silhouettes in this game.
You ever ask
part
yourself
of
how this part of the world gets so
and
fucked up all
with that comes
time.
That we wanted a really
just
high
work here,
range in the HDR. So when you're inside a house, the windows are basically white and so on. And here you can also see a lot of point lights, and they're all dynamically, so they're possible to shoot them down, basically. I think most of you have seen real-time radiosity working in different engines. So this is a very simple way of showing how it works. And what I'll show next is that we're using this in a really large scale, about a 3 level, not just in these small rooms. And I'll show you how it works when I'm actually working with it, because it's not only just in the game. Like at any time when I work on this level, change light setting. And all the radiosity and all the bounce updates. So we're going we're going from something that took one day to a second. So we're really getting a lot more time that we can iterate on the lighting. And as I said, we wanted particles to fit more into the world. And they get all the indirect light that all the other objects get in the world. And they also is connected to the point light. So all the effects will work in different light settings. Characters are supposed to find a bomb, an EAD, and disarm it, and then go back up.
You okay in there? Just another goddamn tremor. Nothing to worry about. One force here to reinforce. Just get that wire cut.
So I'm not going to show you how this ends. How does this real-time radio set architecture work for a game? I'm going to show you how it works. How does this full lighting pipeline work for Battlefield 3, basically? So I'll just start by some basics, how lighting works, and what we want with this. So when light strikes a surface, it's either reflected or absorbed or partially re-emitted. Surfaces that mostly reflect light appear shiny, and we say they're highly specular. Now, surfaces that absorb and then tend to re-emit does this in all directions. So they appear matte and look the same regardless of how we look at them from, what angle we look at them from. Mostly matte surfaces, such as dry concrete or paper, are said to be highly diffused. Now, both specular reflections and diffuse re-emit bounce light back into the world. So the reflected light could then strike another surface, and where another portion of it may be bounced, and then it continues till it's either absorbed or reflected out of the environment. Now, this bounce effect is typically ignored in most game lighting models because it massively increases the complexity of the computation. There are two main approaches to simulating global illumination effects in games right now. Now, artists can either resort in pre-baked light maps, or they can manually place lights into the world to model light reflection. Both approaches of lighting has a couple of failings. Now, pre-baked lighting, this is a screenshot from Mirror's Edge. Now, pre-baked lighting can produce really high quality, but it severely limits the dynamic aspects of a game lighting. And what I mean by that, we cannot have destruction because it's baked in. As I said before, it's very time-consuming, and it limits the artist's ability to iterate on the lighting. Now, this is a typical light map that we actually rendered out in Mirror's Edge. And simulating global illumination by placing indirect lights does give an artist really good control, but it's very difficult in practice, and it's really hard to get a constant result by doing this. And one other thing is that it really can affect performance, depending on how many lights or spotlights or point lights you're placing in the world. Now, these two screenshots, this is real-time radiosity time, and this is the direct light. They do look different. It's really hard to get that really good quality. So, Enlighten dynamically computes all the indirect lights within your scene. All the real-time, radiosity really provides artistic control over all the bounce light while allowing a fully dynamic workflow. Now, this greatly reduces the time as a lighting artist to basically iterate on the lighting. The real-time radiosity output texture could be stored can store the color and intensity of the indirect light as well as the major directions of light. This information can then be used in your shaders to compute indirect light reflections and normal map surfaces. Now, for Enlighten to really work, or this real-time radiosity work, we have to split the wall, this lighting system, into two parts. And this is mainly because of memory consumption, but also performance while lighting. Simplifying the geometry is necessary for Enlighten to be able to handle all this radiosity data. So the first one is the light map geometry. And it's actually not light mapped, it's radiosity maps, because it's just only our indirect light. It's usually enlarged in animate objects, and it can receive and it can bounce light. Now, they're always static geometry. The second one is the light droplet geometry. It's usually small and organic. It could be huge, but it's really good if it's small and organic. It can receive light. It cannot bounce light. And it's always dynamic, but it can also be static geometry if it's small enough, basically. So in the mesh classification picture you will soon see, you can see how we clearly define the light map geometry and the light droplet geometry. So all the static here is the yellow, and all the blue is the dynamic. And you'll see here, this is the light maps that's getting generated real time. And what you can see here is this is only the indirect light. So I'll start with the light map lit geometry. So usually light map lit geometry, when we make light maps for objects, it depends on how many polygons we have it. Depending on how many polygons we have on it, the resolution of the light maps becomes smaller. because we have so many polygons and we have to put them into a second UV set of an object. I'll call this detailed geometry, but this is basically the geometry that we actually render. And usually an artist makes this UV set and maps it with different materials, and it usually looks something like this. And when we create the second UV set for making a light map, we need to place all these shells in 0 to 1, basically. And this geometry, this detailed geometry, has no additional lighting data in it. So we don't read this object for any lighting information. As I said before, we have to simplify this geometry to be able to have real-time radiosity. And we have an off-axis lighting that comes from directional light map. What I mean by this is that we can have the information of the normal maps from this mesh to say where the bounce light comes from. So here's our simplified geometry that we use to actually light the world. So this geometry has a very simple UV set. And this is the mesh that actually renders out this light map. So the poly count isn't important in this mesh, but the shells are. So you don't want to have a lot of shells in this one. But if you have an object that you may have detail in, you could delete those and still have these big shells, but have some polygons in this shell. And we have various authoring options. So we have this detailed geometry, right? And we have this target geometry that renders out this dynamic light map. So when we create the second UV set for this detailed geometry, that UV set needs to look like the target geometry UV set. That means when we render this real-time light map, we can just hook it in to the second UV set if it looks exactly the same. So we do this when we import all the objects. So when we've done that, when we're importing, it automatically, so no artist have to do this. It just listens, looks to this simplified geometry in that UV set, and place all the shells you have in your detail mesh at the same place. So now when we've done this, we can just render this light map and it will be placed at the same place as this target geometry. So here we have the light map, and all these cubes you see here is 1 pixel in the light map. And we take this light map that's getting dynamically rendered, as I said, and just hooking it into the second UV set on our detailed geometry. It looks like this. I've zoomed up a small piece here, so you can see that this is actually the like 5,000 polygons house, actually. But it has this light map here. So that was that. Now I'll go to the light property geometry. We need to store all the lighting information for the dynamic objects, and that's basically the characters. It could be, as I said, small geometry, and also very complex geometry, like a tree. We don't want to make a light map for a tree that has lots of trunks and lots of polygons and stuff in a different way. So what we do is, so therefore we place light probes in the world that store the global illumination lighting. The objects that read these light probes can only receive light, not bounce or generate additional light. As you can see in this picture, all the probes are stored in this grid. So I don't know if you can see in that picture, but there's small red crosses there where at every point there we save information of all the indirect light. So in this picture, you can see the positions of these crosses you see before, represented as spheres. In each of these positions, we store the lighting using a spherical harmonics representation, which means we basically have all the indirect light in all directions. As all the dynamic objects move through this grid, they pick up the correct lighting, basically. So when we've done this, we've placed our objects in our world that has light maps, and we've placed these light map grids into the world. We actually have to bake something. We have to do a compute. We have to analyze all this information that we have now. Now, before we can run the game in dynamic warehousing, we have to do a pre-compute pass in the pipeline. And in this step, we analyze the geometry in the scene and generate data which we need to, in the game to generate the dynamic lighting. And what we do actually is every pixel you have on the light map in all the static geometry just gets information where the next pixel is. So when that pixel gets some light, indirect light on it, it just knows that, okay, I have all my friends around me that I need to continue sending light to. And this is what this pre-compute does. It just stores all this information where the light should go when a pixel hits it. This could be time-consuming, depending on how many objects we have on the scene. But the thing you saw in the film, doing this pre-compute takes about 20 minutes. If we add more computers to IncrediBuild, that could be even less. But we have to redo this when we modify any of the static geometry in the scene. But we don't have to change anything. We can put in objects that have dynamic lighting, we can put point lights in there, and we can actually change how much light from all the surfaces should bounce. And we don't have to do any pre-computing loop. I think I do it like 3 times a day, basically. I do it at morning and then at lunch, and so it's not that time-consuming. It's not like Mirror's Edge. So the complete rendering pipeline looks like this. First, we update light maps and light probes on the GPU. Next, we run the geometry pass, where we add bounce light from the light maps and light probes to a separate G-buffer, which we encode in a log LUV. Now, a log LUV is a 32-bit RGB LDR. That's a low dynamic range texture that we encode the HDR in. We do this to save memory and performance, basically. Finally, in the light pass, we first render all the deferred lights. Then we add the indirect light from the G-buffer. So I'll just go through a couple of things we added. We have something we call sky visibility. It's a term we use to say how much each pixel can see. So as you can see in this picture, the red in this picture sees maximum light from the sky. And the black we see here sees nothing of the sky. So we use this one, we use this buffer to blend between the dynamic outdoor environment map and the static indoor environment map. And this is to avoid the problem of having a sky M map when you're inside a room that has no windows, basically. And we also use this to store in all our light probes this information. So when a character or a dynamic object, say in a very specular object, is outside, it has an M map that looks like it comes from the outside. It has the sky and it has the clouds and all that. But when it goes inside to a room, we can blend because all the light probes knows about how much skylight it sees. So we just blend between these M maps depending on where you are. We have to create these static M maps, and we could for every room if we want. So this indoor environment gets its color and intensity from the dynamic radiosity that we calculate. This is combined with a black and white albedo M map that modulates it and creates a view dependent motion in the surface. This indoor environment map consists of a 32-bit RGB texture, which all of the channels we can have different M maps in. And that's because we have like brushed metal. We have a special M map for that, and we have a special M map for glass, and we have a special M map for the sight of the gun. So for different levels, we create different M maps, basically. So for large environments, what we need to do is we need to make a spherical harmonic representation of the sky. This is used for lighting the outer environments, basically. This small M across you see on the left side is the picture, in every picture here, is the spherical harmonics debug view. And this is not connected to the sky texture at all. And that's very important in the lighting system for some parts of it to be disconnected. Because if the art director wants the sky to be brighter or the darker, we don't want that to change the lighting on the ground. He likes how that is, but he wants to increase the light of the sky texture. So we have this setting that we do to represent the sky, basically. And so for terrain, the terrain consists of lots of different patches in different sizes. So what we do, we don't place big, huge cubes with light probes all over the world. That would be really stupid. What we do is we look at all the patches on the terrain, and at every corner of every patch, we place a light probe, and we move it up a couple of meters, basically. And we also place one in the middle. And this is really fancy, because when we increase the size of it when you, in the play area, basically, we get high resolution of these light probes automatically. And this is the same for the light maps we use on the terrain. You can see the red, the yellow one there in the middle, and the pink and the green and the cyan one, you can see that it's like higher. But it's the same amount of texture space. We use a 32 by 32 texture for every patch here. So when you look further away, you have this patch that's a lot bigger, and it also has lower resolution. So for all the point lights and spotlights we have, it's of course connected with Enlighten. But here is the same thing that with the sky, basically, that all the point lights we have in the world, we can tell every point light, you won't bounce any light if we want to. So this is disconnected also. So when I enable Enlighten on this one, or the radiosity, dynamic radiosity, it bounces. But I could change the color of what bounce it has. So it's also disconnected. And that's coming back to how lighting artists work in film. I mean, you put lights there that you want, but it may be not correct, or you darken the sky, but you still have the same lighting. So everybody here should know why this is important. So I'll go through a couple of best practices for this. And one big thing is when you decide what to be light probe lit and what to decide to do light probe lit and static, basically. If you have something like this house, for example, you have these breakable parts here. You have like geometry that's very detailed. What we do then, we take those parts out and we import them as light probe lit instead. And most of the artists have to like look at the orbit. Okay, how does this look? Can I use light probe for all this? Is this needed? Do I need to have some surfaces that actually bounce light at all? So it's very important to look at this first, because we want to like optimize all this information. So we don't use too much light maps objects, basically. The blue, you can see there is actually transparent surfaces. And light or dynamic radiosity doesn't need to be in that pass. We don't have to do that for our transparent surfaces. So this radiosity thing, this dynamic radiosity that we're doing, we could only use this for a really fast workflow of doing static radiosity maps. And what I mean by, as I said before, is that it's a radiosity map. So it's no shadows in it. It's only the indirect light. So I don't know if you can see there. Yeah, you can. If you want to have real time, and we're doing real time on PC, totally real time radiosity for it, because we have the memory for it. But for consoles, we have a bit of a memory issue there, because it takes a lot of memory. So what we can do there is that have separate areas that we have a really low resolution of these light maps. And then we can have real-time radiosity in small areas for console. We're also streaming this data. If we're in this green area, you can see on the top left there, we can wait for streaming in this area for the gray, basically. But when you're playing this gray area, we can stream out all this dynamic light maps in the green area. We're also using a lot of time lapse in Battlefield 3. We had that in the beginning of the Bad Company 2 level, single player, And this is something we wanted for Battlefield 3 also. Now for PC, everything is fine here because we have this dynamic lit geometry everywhere when we change the sky and move it. But for, as I said, for console, we have to have a lot of objects that actually have static information. Now, the sun and shadows are still dynamic, and all the objects that are dynamically, that uses the light probe, that's still dynamic. So we have to be really look at the level and see how we can do this. When we want to have a time lapse, we're not using any time lapse on multiplayer levels, but we will do this in single player. And usually it's a linear gameplay that we're going from one part to another part, and we're not seeing this other side of town, so we can have this static baked radiosity maps in this area because you're not seeing it. So we're also really interested in range, and range, I think, it's really beautiful, but we have to be careful because all the light probes we have in the world, we try to not have too many light probes because it takes up compute time. So we have to be careful how much range we use from a window to a really dark room. And then we have something called color grading. And I think a lot of engines have this, but it's basically a really great tool for the art director. He can just take a screenshot from the game and start it up in Photoshop, and then just make his brightness and color and whatever he wants to do to the screenshot. Then we take all the stuff he's done in Photoshop to a small other picture and just apply what he's done to the screenshot and just import it into the game. And we get exactly what he did in Photoshop, basically. And it's very powerful. Film uses this. When film first is developed, you usually have huge range on the film. You don't have everything that's totally black, and you don't have anything totally white. So you can use post-processing for that. And you can see here when we have the color grading on, and you can see it off. And we also use a filmic tone mapping. I don't know if you can see here on the screen, but what we're doing with this tone mapping formula is to push down all the bright areas. Because if you use the old engines with lighting, you're just multiplying light. And usually it looks like really burned colors. I'm not sure you can see it there. Yeah, you can see it some. The formula we're using doesn't push down the blacks at all. But that really depends on how the art direction looks for the game. And you should add the one that suits your project, basically. So I'll go through a conclusion. The advantages of this system. So first of all, we earn a lot of time. We have a really fast workflow allowing us to iterate a lot on levels to get them exactly how we want them. And the second thing is that design changes isn't that painful anyway anymore, because we play the level and it's not that good, what should we do? Well, we have to change all these houses. And the lighting artist goes, oh no, this is perfect. I made this really nice with the sun coming out. And it's usually painful when they have to change something. This is a big problem we had in Mirror's Edge. We had like a beautiful level, but it wasn't that fun to play. So we hadn't really time to relit it again, and we had to ship it like that. But the really big thing is the unified lighting system. All the geometry we have in the world, and all the effects, and all the dynamic objects like vehicles and the characters, all use the same lighting system, basically. What we did in Frostbite 1 was that we had like special systems for getting into houses for dynamic objects, and we had a special system for particles when it's in shadow, and we had to have different systems for it to like look correctly. Now everything is unified. But there are disadvantages with this system. Memory. The radiosity maps takes up memory. But it's nothing. Well, it's compared to Mirror's Edge, and actually Bad Company too, it's nothing. On the level you just saw, it's a radiosity map that is 1024 times 1024 texture, radius map for the whole level. And that means we can take away all our ambient occlusion textures we use for houses, and we can take a lot of special textures we made to simulate global illumination. Performance, depending on how many light probe, or density of it, that means like how long from every light probe we place. So we need to be careful how many light probes we place everywhere. And as a lighting artist, we have to place light probe where they really works really well, like in door openings. We want to have one there, and we want to have one in the room. And also the size and the amount of all the point lights and spotlights we have in the world. As I said, we have an authoring of a geometry. This could take some time, but every time you do a light map for an object that we did in Mirror's Edge, it's basically the same time. The only thing is that you have to think a bit how you map the object before you do this simplified geometry. And what we also found that it's sometimes hard to grasp this concept for some artists because it's a bit different what they usually do with light maps. And also that, as I said before, that the light map, the UV set you map your textures with, you have to think about how they look, basically. And we have this pre-compute, this small baking, actually. As I said before, it could be time-consuming, depending on how the size are of your level. So this summary, all this. So with this system, we win a lot of workflow. It's dynamic and it's very fast, as you saw in the film. It is a bit different, and we have to analyze this geometry before we can light the world. So for PC, we have memory to be able to have this radiosity, this real-time radiosity. So we can have a fully dynamic destruction, basically. So as Frostbite 1 was, we're really focused on destruction. So for PC, when we blow a hole in a wall, light will be coming, bouncing around in there. But we can't have exactly this for console because it takes up too much memory. So we have a memory issue here. But there are ways of fixing this. We can put indirect light there. But we've tested this, and it still works pretty good. But there are ways of still having it look really good, even have full destructible objects. Because we have shadows that are real time, and the sun will still come in to a room when you blow a hole in it. And we, as I said before, we have these light probes, so objects, they go to the edge of a hole and jump out of it and comes to an outdoor environment. It will look correct. We don't have this intensity in the normal maps, the bounce light. We have intensity, but we don't have the color. And that's basically because of memory consumption. All right, that's about it. I want to follow to thank the following people. I want to thank Per Einarsson, he's the rendering architect for Frostbite, and Oskar Kalén is one of the lead lighting artists. He was working on my research, and Matthias Kalén and Andrew Hamilton. So I have people from Enlighten over there. So if there are any technical questions, they're happy to answer you. Not one question. Perfectly clear, everything.
All right. About the blocking phase where you modelize over your detail modeling for the level. So basically you just make a block out over all the level and lay out the UVs for this simplified geometry?
Yes.
All right. That's my question.
All right.
Hello. So I have a question about the light. Is the light probe positioning itself, can those be created and destroyed dynamically, or are the light probe's positions also part of the pre-baking process?
Yes, in the pre-compute.
Okay, so you
all this information, that's the pre-compute we do. That's what we do when all the obis are placed into the well. We have to do this pre-compute.
Okay.
So it understands where that light probe is in the well. Depending on where all the light maps are, it just knows that, okay, I'm this close to this pixel into the well, and when this pixel gets any light on it, the light probe will know where I am in the well.
Okay.
So it's just storing a lot of information at any point for these light probes, and as I said before, all the pixels that are on the light maps just knows where the other pixel is. That's why we cannot move a static object when we've done this, because it's like, I know where I am in the world, and if you move me, I'll still think that I'm over here.
Right. So both. So you're saying that both the light probes and the light maps are static, and anything dynamic is always lit by the light probes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was just wondering about the light probes themselves. Do you have to place them manually, or is it sort of procedurally generated and it puts them throughout the world?
For the terrain, that's procedurally placed in the world. But for all the other smaller areas for static light maps, we have to place them ourselves.
Okay.
Because we're looking into this to do this because if we can lower the amount of light probes into the world, we get more frame rate, basically. So we want to do this. We're also culling it. So if we're placing a cube into the world and one of these places that we store light is inside of any object, we discard it.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
That's it.
With all the destructibility, such as the building coming down in the video, is any of those objects able to bounce light?
That's a good question. Right now, for that animation we did there, all the objects that are moving, that we actually animate with bones, they are light probe lit. So, but the objects, the big object, all the pieces that fall out is light probe lit, but the object that's falling has a static light map on it. And even if it's moving, you can't really see that.
All right. Thank you.
Great stuff, thanks. I wanted to ask you about the sunlight and the shadow method you're using for dynamic shadows from the sun.
Yeah.
Is it a cascading shadow map, or is it?
Maybe Johan Andersson over there can answer that question for you.
Just curious, thank you.
Okay.
The answer was yeah, it's cascading.
Okay, good.
When you're constructing these levels out of lots of buildings, can the buildings be instanced, or does everything need to be set up by hand so it can be light mapped?
Question again.
So if a level's made up of lots of different buildings, can you make a library of base buildings and instance them into level, or is everything sort of made by hand in Maya and light mapped by hand? I can...
Well, the simplified geometry, we have to make as a technical artist or an artist that's creating an object that's going to have such big surface that it needs to have bounce light, basically. We have to create one by ourselves for the simplified geometry. That's the only thing he has to do.
Yeah, so
No,
I wasn't sure if you could then instance that multiple times throughout the level.
Yes, of course. Yes, of course.
Okay, thanks.
This approach to breaking up lighting in various passes, do you think it could have any use in the Unreal Engine?
I think Unreal Engine has a light on, actually.
Right, but I mean with the light probes and dynamic lighting solutions.
I don't know. I think so, yeah. I don't know. I don't know exactly how the workflow for Enlighten works in Unreal. But, of course.
So,
Maybe I can jump in. So this stuff also is available in Unreal. So you can have kind of a similar setup, not exactly the same workflows and exactly this kind of lighting scheme also in Unreal. But with this real-time radiosity, it's available for Unreal as well. Not directly within the UDK, but as a kind of additional product to the UDK.
Is that a plugin or something?
No, it's basically a kind of, you drop it in as a source.
Okay.
So yeah, have to recompile Unreal and stuff, yeah.
All right, thank you.
All right, thank you very much.
I was talking to you on MSN for a while.
Nice to see you. Nice to see you.
You too. I just want to say hi in person.
Yeah.
I've actually left that left the studio. I'm at a different company now. But
all right. What studio are you on now?
The New Warner Studio in Montreal.
All right.
Yeah, but just wanted to say hi.
No, that's cool. It's cool.
Have a good show.
Yeah, thank you.
It was a good presentation.
Thank you. Hi.
I'm Andreas from BioWare.
Okay.
How are you guys doing?
We're doing fine.
So, basically you were using Beast before, right?
What?
You were using Beast before for Mirror's Edge? What are you guys
Beast.
Using?
Beast, yes.
So,
sorry.
How do you find the quality? Let's say we don't want to destroy our world and we want the best lighting possible. Is it possible to get this with this system?
We're working on it. We did a really good test of it, but we have problems. For example, a simple problem, farther away. We have these real-time shadows, but we can't have it like 1,000 meters away. So when we have skyscrapers over here, we want that big shadow to go down here, over there. But we can't have that much shadow because that takes a lot of rendering to do.
Yeah.
So for Mirror's Edge, we have these huge skyscrapers that all had baked shadows from it.
Yeah.
But with Frostbite 2, we can't have that.
Okay.
There are ways. We're going to fix that. We have ideas of doing the split up of all the shadow to, like, we're using only this, but we're losing.
Yeah.
We're using a lot of for these, but they're going to be really low res.
Right.
But right now, that's one of the things that doesn't work. And also, we use a lot of area lights for Mirror's Edge.
What about close by? Where in this you get really soft shadows with the penumbra, can you get that kind of soft shadows using the system?
Yes.
Kenny,
okay. Ask about Sting O.
Hi, how's it going?
Yeah, so as I said, we're not 100% there, but we're almost there.
Okay.
We know the technical problems that we need to fix.
I had a question on the phone card.
Okay.
And for super sharp circular reflections, do you have a special light or is it print of your in the image or do you have to do it yourself? For example, for Windows reflection.
That is a dynamic.
Okay, yes. But I guess it's quite low, so is it rendered in real time?
I said dynamic, but it's actually just rendering really, like, we can use
like
it.
Like every couple of frames?
Yeah. Well, even lower.
Okay,
even lower, because you don't see that.
Yes.
And what we're only rendering is only the sky.
Okay.
Dynamic is only the sky. So
yeah, the skybox.
The skybox. What we have as a color, like you have the color of, do you know what I mean?
Yes.
The color of the map, that is always static.
Okay. Yes.
But the sky is not. Do you know what I mean by that?
Yeah. Okay. So is it quite low? I mean, the specular macula for the...
How big is the map we have? Is it 21? 256?
Console PC. Also, I think it's like... I think it'd be 128. It's pretty low res, but it works reasonably well.
I think also when we come to this indoor environment, we have...
It's quite low.
That's very low. Because we just don't want to have movement in that one.
Yeah, that's what we have to say.
Because we have the specular lights. It's always reflecting.
Yeah. I guess, but you have a lot of windows as well. And
windows,
so I guess you need to put some sharp reflections for the outer sections.
Yeah.
But we have some problems with transparent glass with the fur.
Yeah, also,
go to Wiki and it says, like, what's the biggest problem? Reflections.
Yeah. That's what we have as well. But we solve most of them, especially reflections as well.
Yeah.
So for like a shadow beneath a desk or something, are you able to get enough of that with just the low res radiosity and some SSA? It's like you like enough of a dark. So you didn't have to have any additional ambient.
There would have to be static the desk, like, all on that, and it was still quite a low res thing under it. But some, like 2 pixels or something.
And when you bake the radiosity, would you include the probe geometry in the bake?
Yes.
So in theory, if a probe object moved, in the solution, would that show up? So if this desk was light probe, and then the desk rolls across the room.
Well, if it's light probe, it doesn't send out any information of light.
Not at all.
It just samples at every frame, and then it's sort of. It's,
but it's just does that radiosity shadow?
Disconnect
them.
Thank you. Did this thing work? Should they
have
demand?
No, that came out.
Yeah, I know, but I would have liked to have HDMI instead of the VJ. But this won't work?
Yeah.
Fuck. Okay, I'm sorry. Because we almost, I don't like VGA. If Mars gets a really brighter quality. Because they said at the desk, like, we don't have any HDMI, we only have VGA. Okay, so you had that. All right.
You're from Sweden, Battlefield. I'm the next speaker, Psycho from Finland.
Oh, yeah. I was wondering actually.
I thought the whole point of these was to do full to parallelize Amazon one system.
They might have added that, but when we started using these, there was just not much available we did with also politics.
Yeah.
It's a really good team.
Everybody was just, what?
So now everything, all your light matches,
the light that's surrounding.
Now it's much more.
Like a character walks in.
All the buildings are. You didn't have to have light to use. Yeah, they have the light system.
There's HDMI. That would be nice, but I don't. I have this one, DVI. DVI. Do you have a adapter for that? I think it would be better. So let's do it.
I had
Sometimes they go like, oh, I'm going to do the first time.
Mä oon siis täällä huoneessa 308 South Hall. Tiedätkö mistä tää on? Okei, hieno juttu. Kiitos paljon. Moi moi. I forgot the laptop power. Pointing sideways or downwards. At least I'm seeing some display here. I can drop the... It's pretty high, this resolution. I could drop it down. FRA IP 2003.
Let me check on something.
Yeah.
Do you have audio on your PowerPoint?
Yes. Okay. Yeah.
We take it. Yeah, exactly.
Any luck?
Someone will be here in just a moment.
Hey, John, I'm
trying to figure out how to put my laptop. Can you get rid of this? No.
It
would be nice to see it like this.
I see what you mean.
Hope it won't drop now. Can you?
I think it'll be alright.
Might. I'll further fix it with this piece of cloth. Let's see. At least now it should be balanced. I think it works.
Well, we can't get it to
I'm seeing a display here.
Yes.
FRI IP 2003 should be out there. This is a DVI converter.
Okay.
There should be a window right here. Oh, there we go. It's rather simple. I can change it if you like. What do you prefer?
720 or anything 16, which would be your 720, 1280 by 720, or even because this is a Mac, you can do 1920 by 1080.
In theory, well, let's see.
Oh, it'll do.
Yeah, I know it will, but
it only. It'll do this
one. Oh, wait a minute.
See, this is local.
Yes, I know, but I'm trying to.
Is that for me, or did I misunderstand?
No,
trying to.
Oh, Dino.
Because there's no. You sorry, wanted 720.
Okay.
And
yeah.
All
or,
this.
Or,
fine.
Or,
yeah.
I mean, Dean asked us.
I was calling
for.
For which?
Yeah.
Dean asked
and that is
the, guy,
the
Dean,
way
the guy
that. See, now you fill.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, I see. It's.
Yeah, you fill.
Okay.
Yeah.
It doesn't do it like directly stretch. I
no
see.
Aspect ratio.
Yeah.
4:3.
Yeah, of course, of course. But I didn't want to go that high resolution. I want to be sure that it runs smoothly. So
okay.
Bigger resolution could be.
You can try this 720.
Yeah, but this is the,
well,
what it gives
I see
me
now.
For.
I see,
yeah.
I see. Let me look with you.
So. 1280 by 960 is
if
not.
That, if you're okay with that, that's what we'll do. Go ahead.
Is it stretching then?
No,
I, oh yeah,
missed,
yeah, I missed it.
It's okay. So you have the bars on the side.
Oh yeah, I don't like that.
Yeah.
Maybe we should try to.
Do the higher one.
Yeah.
I'm looking at your resolution availability. That's it. 4:3.
Yeah.
4:3. 5.4,
yes.
1280, 1024, 4.3.
Yeah.
We can try 1344. See, let's see what that looks like.
Let's see.
No, still bars. It's still 5.3.
Yeah.
Or 5.4.
Yeah.
So the solutions that we have available for your HD image.
Well, wait a minute. No, we should be able to get that.
He wants to keep it a lower res.
Yeah,
and
maybe.
The graphics card but, is 4.3 to 5.
But let's see if it runs. Yeah. I think let's try the video. If it you runs want, smoothly, then it's cool.
So you want, because of the video, you don't want it
to. Yeah, I want it to be slightly lower resolution to guarantee the frame
okay.
rate. But
let's see. 720p.
He has 768. And 960.
For some reason, well, you see, it's quite kind of like
okay.
it should be 30 frames per second.
Can I take
stuff.
A look real quick?
Yeah.
If you don't mind, I'll just see the problem.
Oh, let's, sorry. Let's take it out. So you want display well here?
Sorry, you get that way. Yeah, sorry. I'm just kind of getting my Mac feed in and I'm.
Gather windows.
Yeah.
Yes, there we go.
So let's try.
For some reason, it doesn't.
Probably by 1024.
Yeah, but that gives these bars.
Okay.
There. Again, you need to gather windows. This
try
is
the
long.
Yeah. Try the 800. What if we clone it?
Well, let's try. Let's go here. Turn on mirroring. Let's try that. And then we have just one item here.
Okay. Now stand by.
But still, maybe.
Hold on.
You're in 1280, 1024
at
60. Okay, so let's do that and let's zoom in.
Okay.
Let's go ahead and go into your video.
Mm-hmm. Would it work better if you want HDMI out? Would it give you more options?
It might. I have DVI
yeah.
there, so if you have the...
Well, there's your video.
Yeah. Well, the frame rate is definitely better.
Yeah.
This is acceptable, at least for me.
You like that? That works for you?
Well,
so,
it's good.
Now, what we did was it's still at 16 aspect.
Yeah.
But we zoomed the image.
Yeah, that's cool.
So, if you want to just take a look and make sure that we didn't lose anything when we zoomed it out, we'll call it good then.
Let's see. The edges look okay.
I can make it bigger. Coming up.